Calling all benders and non-benders alike. Jump into the epic world of Avatar with your favorite podcast, Avatar Braving the Elements. Hosted by me, Janet Varney.
And me, Dante Bosco. Each week we'll recap and discuss a new episode.
So come join us and our amazing guests, from creators to cast to superfans, to chat about all things Avatarverse.
It's Fire Nation time. Book of Fire. Let's go. Listen to Avatar Braving the Elements
wherever you get your podcasts.
As you know, I grew up on a cattle ranch in the United Kingdom, and as the son of British cattle ranchers, part of my job was, as the year would turn from spring to summer or summer to fall, to move the cattle to suitable grazing grounds according to the season. Or in simpler terms, I would transhume. And it's time to transhume this podcast into the Doom Room. I'm Alex, and I'm doomed.
Recording our voices on this podcast has been a real pleasure. We're coming to the end, and I don't know what to do besides to speak calmly into my microphone. Boom, boom, boom. We're in the Doom Room. I'm Justin, and I'm doomed.
I'm Pete.
And we are going to be talking about Doom Patrol Season 3, Episode 9, Evil Patrol. Spoiler warning here, if you haven't checked it out yet or it's been a while. But as Madame Rouge heads down to Boca Raton to team up with Mala and the Brain to restart the Brotherhood of Evil, Rita is doing the same up at Doom Manor, trying to muster her forces against Madame Rouge. As usual, nobody seems very convinced on either side, but by the end of the episode, everybody is in trouble, as you could probably predict from the second to last episode of the season. And there is a fight coming, though it is not necessarily in the directions that you'd expect. Everybody is basically, as usual for the show, kind of spinning wildly out of control in different directions. And mostly, at least when it comes to the Doom Patrol, through various circumstances, nobody really has powers anymore. Or do they?
Ooh. I mean, it's totally bananas what's happening right now.
You're saying that because of the large monkey, right?
Yes, and that's one of Pete's favorite words, bananas.
Pete has not looked up at us once this entire time yet.
It was a long time since we had watched this app. I had to wait for Justin to get all the way to Hawaii. There's a lot of stuff, but just revisiting my notes before we get started. This is a great TV show, and man, like, after three seasons, I'm still loving every single second of it. I can't wait to see how this is going to end.
By notes, you mean you wrote, "This is a great TV show," on a giant piece of paper in front of you?
Yeah. Yeah. I still got to read it.
Yeah. By piece of paper, do you mean used pizza box?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And instead of a pen, instead of a pen, you wrote with soy sauce.
Hot sauce, but yeah, okay.
Hot sauce. See? Okay, cool.
But to you, soy sauce is spicy.
Very spicy. Yeah. It's got that salt heat.
It's got that kick. It's got that kick to it. Right, Pete?
Yeah, I'm not a fan of soy sauce. Anywho.
All right. Really? Who's doomed? That's it.
There you go. Right. Well, let's get into this episode. There's obviously a lot to talk through here. We left off with the cliffhanger of Rita versus Laura, and we quickly veer away from that. Now,
that's upsetting. I mean, I was hyped for this showdown, and then, you know,
it was more
Madame
of a
Rouge,
slowdown, is what
Madame Rouge was like. Peace, I'm a bird, try to fight me. And, you know, I give Rita credit. Like, she took a shot at it, but that bird is quick, you know? Mm-hmm.
You got to be faster with birds, because they always have the advantage of hollow bones.
And flying away is what I was going to say.
Another good advantage.
Oh, I didn't think about that.
Birds fly, right? That's when you go up in the sky, right? Mm-hmm.
The main thing I think about birds is the hollow bones thing that you said, Justin. But I guess they do fly as well. Huh.
I'm so jealous of those hollow bones and all those worms they get to eat. Birds, man.
Wow, really?
Living the life.
Well, you do love it when someone chews up your food for you and then spits it in your mouth.
That's exactly right. I love it. I love to be baby birded. It's very hard when you're working out of town alone to find someone to baby bird you.
Yeah,
but if you ask the right hotel person, they will. They're happy to baby bird on you. You got
to
be careful, though, because you can't have a vegetarian baby bird a steak for you.
Oh, wow. Your life is insane.
Not to Pete out here and talk about the jump back to the beginning of the episode, but we did start with what I thought was a really good flashback here to 1917 with the beginning of the Sisterhood of Dada. We got Laura, Rita, and Shelley all sitting together, the women and of the Sisterhood.
She's creating and her as a little dance. Note,
the rest of the Sisterhood just disappeared at this point. Like, they have to come back, I feel like, in the final episode because they've been shoved aside, which is fine, mind you. I get why. But for the Rita versus Laura conflict, we're missing those other members. But that said,
I think they're
it's
gone.
A flashback to a party. You know, they were just in a different room. You know what I mean? Everybody wasn't there for the kind of big the dance, you know, creation. So, you know, sometimes that happens in parties. Some people hang out in the kitchen. Other people, they'll go find a kind of room in the back. You know, it's, it really depends on what you're into.
Sorry, I've only ever been the center of attention. Is that, that what you're – can you tell me what that would be like to go somewhere else?
You don't say, baby bird.
What – well, so we got this trio here. They're doing the dance. We've talked a lot on the past couple of episodes about our views on the art in the show, specifically the art coming from the Sisterhood of Dada. Here we get a song from Rita where she goes, love me, don't look at me, love me, don't look at me, which is her essential conflict. So
yeah, it's nice moment to hear her say expression for her.
Yeah.
They seem so very excited about it.
Well, I thought it was true to the character. I thought, you know, because sometimes we walk this line and you know, TV shows were like, all right, we're going to do a dance sequence. And we're like, all right, we're going to see how this goes. But I felt like they kept it in the wheelhouse of what the character could do. It wasn't like all of a sudden she was just like popping and locking and doing crazy moves. So I thought it was kind of like sweet for Rita. I thought it worked well.
I also – oh, go ahead, Justin.
I was going to say, from my time in the improvised dance world, I think that it was all right. It expressed something, but the moves could have been a little bit more elaborate.
I do think the point here, actually, there's a brief moment when they're talking and Rita – they say something about art and – they're like, you know what we mean, right? And she's like, oh, absolutely. Yeah, I know exactly what you mean. I think the point here is that Rita does not get the art on the same level necessarily that the rest of them do. And that is why she's overreacting in this way. She's using it. She used the eternal flagellation essentially as a supervillain plan. And there's a lot of back and forth here in terms of who is the villain. Is it Rita? Is it Madame Rouge? Is it both of them? Is it neither of them? Yes,
but what's interesting about the character is we kind of go back to this and she kind of doesn't know what art is. But like, as we know, Rita, she's very much I am an artist and I express myself, you know, and she's very kind of actory, likes to talk about artistic expression. So it's interesting to see her kind of at the beginning, not sure kind of herself or what's going on. So it's interesting, that journey.
Well, I think there's a big difference between Rita, Hollywood starlet from the 1940s, 50s. I'm kind of forgetting the timeline.
And beyond.
Yeah, and beyond. But she's a old-timey Hollywood starlet, and the way that she approaches this versus, say, Bicycle Guy, Frenzy, I guess is his name, who is legit like, I am into Dada. That is my thing, and I believe in that wholeheartedly. So in a way, I do think they're effectively painting Rita as a dilettante in this space, I would say.
Well, wow. I think she sort of is a fake...
dilettante. Okay, sorry.
Fake it till you make it kind of a vibe. She like is she likes the vibe of the Sisterhood of the Dada, but doesn't really do the art side of it. And then all the way to today, when she's doing the flagellation, it's not about the art at all for her. It's about this revenge
is art in itself, you know?
Revenge?
Yeah, there's nothing like a well-constructed revenge, just like a well-made art piece, you know what I mean?
You're a revenge artist, right, Pete?
Oh, man.
Tell us about some of your pieces.
You know, I try. I'm a humble...
Eats pieces.
You know, I can't even... You know, I would say I'm a line producer in the ranking. Oh,
okay,
of
default to that. That's good.
Yeah.
Just to go back a second to clarify for you, Pete, dilettante is a portmanteau of Dilbert and aunt. It's a way of saying Dilbert's aunt, but quicker.
Oh, great. Thank you.
And portmanteau is a portmanteau of port... man and toe. So when you're talking about a guy who's standing on a port and you're looking at his toes, you say, look at that portmanteau.
I wasn't sure if you were talking about port like the wine or the port like, okay.
You can talk
I'm going to port portmanteau later today. It's in here in Hawaii.
I bet.
Really a great tourist attraction. And you know I'm going to have my toes out and proud showing them off.
Suds out, toes out. That's what that shirt says. Just be careful.
People who seem like birds, but then will turn into people, will fly down and attack your toes.
I don't trust any of these birds because a lot of the birds are people.
Yeah.
Yeah. Birds always be going for your footworms, I say. Toes.
Toes. Your footworms. Because parrots are, they talk. They're basically halfway human.
Do you think people are still listening to this, or do you think they've given up out of
no, they gave up 30 episodes ago.
Frustration of our stuff.
Well, let me say, I do think this show, this episode, to take a wider scope on it, there's so much that they're dealing with that it, much like our conversations, it may collapse under the weight of all of the stuff that's happening in the show.
Oh, man.
I kind of agree with you. There's a lot of stuff that I really loved in this episode, but there was a point, and I'm not out of it. Like, I'm trying to think how to clarify my words here. But when they got to the Madame Rouge baby who was attacking them, weirdly CGI'd, I was like, I don't know if this is completely working right now. Like, I like the idea here, but there was something about the execution, and particularly turning Madame Rouge, who so far has not been a physical threat in any way, into this insane baby person who's beating them up, that went like 5% too far for me. I'm not out of the show or anything, but I don't know if you guys felt any.
I can understand where you're coming from, but I just was like, so I could not look away. It was kind of like this "what is happening" type of insanity that the show does. That I was just like, oh man, this is so weird. But I'm kind of like, still in this fight, like, oh man, we got to get the rubber band lady here who's like growing and then eventually becomes a full size just as she jump tackles, which is, as we all know, that's the when you've jump tackled, this is when you're a full adult.
Yeah, that's the sign of growing up in the LePage household. Yeah, they play full on ping pong with her. I liked the fight. I thought it was nice to sort of have something happen, but I agree with you. It was it's just everyone is in a bad place and sort of spinning so hard all at the same time. And Rita, who's trying to organize them, is sort of spinning the hardest. So it just feels super chaotic. And there's no one to really hold on to in this group at all right now.
Well, and I do think that's part of the point, mind you. I'm always a big fan of the sum up stuff that people do. We've talked about that when like Ronnie comes in and is like, so you're a mummy and you're this and you're that thing. Mm-hmm. And that's sort of Rita's job here, is everybody comes in one by one and she approaches them. And we find out that basically nobody has powers. Like, first, Cyborg has human skin. Jane is now Kay in charge and doesn't have powers there, as far as they know, up until the end of the episode. Cliff has powers, but clearly is very distracted by a bunch of other things. And Larry is busy with his parasite baby.
Yeah, the old parasite baby.
So we got all of these different characters. And I don't know. I like that position for everybody. I like the fact that Rita is pointing out that nobody has anything right now, and she has lost everything emotionally. So that puts her in a similar space. While everybody else seems like they're up, like they're moving forward, but potentially at least power-wise is moving backwards, she power-wise has moved up, but emotionally is moving backwards. So it creates a nice contrast there, I think, among the team.
Yeah, and I don't know if it's just being like as a lifelong comic book reader and superhero fan, but that the scene when she's like crossing off their powers, she's like, oh, we don't have this, we don't have this. Like, that's stressful to me.
Yeah, yeah. It's hard to see somebody crossed off, you know what I mean? Counted out, because it's like, if you learn anything from this show, you can't count them out. You know what I mean? Like, one minute they're kind of a rubber band break dancer, and the next minute they're a bird. You know, so you don't know how this.
You gotta save this gold for the Pete of advice section at the end there, Pete. All right.
No.
Yeah, don't blow all your great advice.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Speaking of your notes that you talked about earlier, I'm curious what the advice section notes look like when you get there.
Oh, it's a whole thing.
Have you seen the Batman? Because the notes the Riddler leaves, it's kind of like that. But it's Pete's advice. As we keep walking through here, why don't we split it off into the different characters since we mentioned them? So why don't we start with Jane, for example?
Oh, come on. You said split it. Well, I guess that works with Jane. That's good.
split it up?
Split it off like, you know, all their personalities are split off.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
I was thinking split it off. Let's talk about Cyborg because he kind of
split off his body,
his armor. Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, he split it off.
Yeah, sure.
Like I just split off my clothes a minute ago. That's why I'm naked.
Yeah. Here's a little section we like to call splitting it off where we talk about Cyborg. So Cyborg, as we know, split off his machine parts. I don't know. That
was it. It was hard for me to look at him. I was just kind of like, oh, no, why, Cyborg. Why? Like, it's not Cyborg anymore. It's just some dude. And it's, I don't know, it's kind of heartbreaking to look at him this way. I guess because of the comic book, you know, background that I've always seen him as Cyborg. So, like,
that makes sense.
This weird thing of, like, you know, like the characters in the show were greeting him like, oh, what's up? And, you know, LT was the only one who was like, hey, congratulations. I was having a hard time kind of being happy for him. I felt like, you know.
Well, it sounds like you're in the same place as everybody else then, because there's that great running bit in the episode where he's like, nobody's happy for me. Why is nobody happy for me about that? Yeah. Which I thought was very fun. I did like this, and I know I was kind of down a little bit on the General Tony stuff from the last episode. I thought it was well done, but didn't quite connect. But I do think, to take that back a little bit, it teed up the Silas Cyborg stuff from the beginning of the episode really nicely here, as Silas basically gives this incredible monologue. He goes through all the times he saw him in the hospital, newborn appendicitis after a varsity football game, and how hard it is for him, and that he made the decision. He ultimately reveals he made the decision to turn him into Cyborg because it's so hard to be a black man in America. He wanted to make it immediately obvious that he was not just that he was more than that. And by the end of the scene, Victor digs into Silas for not giving him even a chance to experience that. I thought that whole sequence was really well written and well acted.
It was, yeah, it was really well done. I mean, you know, it's got to be hard to be a hospital because dad's got to walk back in all the time and being like, hey, can you give my kid like some armor or maybe like one of those arm cannon things, you know? So
every dad wants their kid to have an arm cannon.
Yeah, you got to think that, you know. I mean, how could you not want that for your child? So it's a tough decision for fathers to make. But, yeah, it was – I thought it was handled both really well from the father's side as well as from Vic's side. Yeah.
Really? Because Vic sort of takes him down there. He's like – he fully just like leaves Silas spinning after that whole conversation.
Well, you know, he's got a lot built up. I mean, he feels like his dad made decisions without him. And, you know, he's finally kind of making decisions on his own a little bit. And, you know, sometimes you got to make your dad cry and then walk away. You guys know that.
What? Nope, I don't. I thought that sounds like a Pete thing. And I liked how it played out throughout the rest of the episode as well.
I agree with you, Alex. I liked the scene here at the top. And he sort of makes the case, he didn't give me a chance. I don't need this. I can just be myself. And then as the episode goes on, every situation he encounters, he's like, I wish I had that Cyborg stuff.
Yeah, he does the arm cannon move.
He's like, great, can you? And has to go get his laptop.
I'll go get my laptop. Yeah, it's like, oh, yeah, it's rough out here, Cyborg.
So I don't know quite what the sort of the larger point is if you put all of Cyborg stuff next to each other. And maybe that's where we're set up to deal with all this stuff in the last episode of the season coming up.
Yeah. Why don't we move over? Why don't we split it off and talk about Jane? Split it off and talk about Larry. Is that better, Pete?
Yeah. Nice. I did like how Cliff said to him, like, what's General Tony going to think? Like, first thing, like, and it was tough because I felt like Vic was happy to see Cliff, and Cliff was like, well, who the fuck are you? You know, it was heartbreaking to see the kind of how Vic was treated a little bit. He was like, I live here. And they're like, well, you can't.
Well, that's been my issue. If we can split it off to Cliff, I guess. That's been my issue with Cliff all season long. And in this episode as well, he's just like such a jerk to everybody. And like is is mean a little bit here, and he's dealing with his own stuff, obviously.
Yeah.
As he always is, but he doesn't need to be so harsh with everybody.
Well, I think particularly with Cliff, he does have a pretty straight line in terms of what his arc is. He is forced to face up to a bunch of different things here, including the fact that there's that great moment where Rita convinces him, why would Clara come back? Why would anything good ever happen to him? And he's already realized he's doing the same things that he's always done. He's in the same patterns he's always been in. And by the end of the episode, he's even left without his robot body because Brain ends up inside of the Cliff body there, taking it over.
I mean,
well, hold on. Let me just finish up my thought here about Cliff. I do think, or hope, that he will be ultimately fundamentally changed by the fact that he is literally outside of his body and just a brain in the same way that the brain was. So not even having that and moving backwards, it's possible that could make him spiral out farther. But my hope is that it sends him in the other direction. He realizes, okay, what I have could be worse. It legitimately could be. So what do I do with what I have?
You know? And that's that thing of, like, you know, you get so wrapped up in your own shit. I mean, Cliff's like, this sucks. I can't feel. I can't touch anything. I'm just a brain in a robot suit. But to a brain in just like a jar, like, that's the greatest thing possible. I mean, to see, you know, it's an evil brain, but to see that brain enjoy Cliff's body like that was just such a nice, funny, amazing moment that it was just kind of like, you know, it was real juxtaposition from what Cliff's kind of been dealing with and, like, not enjoying.
So you like where it's at. You want to see Robot Man be this guy who's, like, dancing it up in Boca Raton?
Well, I mean,
flirting with some older ladies, which I know Pete is always a fan of.
Don't kind of bring that shit in me. I just think that it's, you know, a great thing of, like, you know, like, it could always be worse. You know what I mean? You think you have it so bad, kind of think about other people who have it worse than you, you know, type of situation. But to see, you know, even this person who's so evil, like, just enjoy the simple things and wanting to kind of, like, yeah, I don't want to fight evil anymore. I just want to live Boca Raton and kind of, you know, maybe enjoy myself with some other women who are maybe of a little bit older age, you know what I mean? Which is appropriate for that brain, you know?
It was a little surprising, to be honest, that they went to that direction just because the brain and Monsieur Mala have already always been in a relationship. There's certainly some hints there where is it actually Mala? Is that how they
Mala,
pronounce it?
Yeah.
Mala. Mala, I believe.
So I've been doing it wrong. But Mala is clearly jealous and upset about everything that's going on. So I hope they do play that out potentially that whole, in a romantic way by the end.
But that whole blender bit with Mala was just so enjoyable. I mean,
it was very fun. It was a fun classic bit.
Yeah. He's just trying to do his stuff.
I did like the brained out Robot Man body, though. I thought the suit was very fun with the high collar to it, the dancing, everything. Yeah. Very enjoyable.
Throwing on a record, the Brotherhood Live recording, I guess they did.
Yeah.
Seems like a fun jam.
And that was Mala's voice on it at the end there singing, which is hysterical. Well done.
Yeah.
Yeah. That gorilla,
I mean, we can talk about
that. Well, gorilla's got range.
And I love
that
just, like,
every time I go to the zoo.
Yeah. People are like, what?
Sir. All right, why don't we finally split it off and talk about Larry? Larry is wandering around with his parasite baby who keeps shocking him the entire episode every time he feels a strong emotion. Again, very fun bit.
And that's what it's like for you guys when you guys had babies, right? It shocks you all the time?
It's emotional shocks.
Yeah.
So when I brought my baby out to, like, different parties I would always go to and stuff, and I was like, oh God, this is bad. This doesn't work. Larry's taking that baby wherever he wants to.
Well, that's the same thing about having a bug Bjorn. You can just bring those things anywhere.
My eldest, when I'd be putting her to bed when she was a kid, when she was just, like, super tiny little baby, she'd always sort of, like, lightly scratch my elbow. Like, she'd reach over there. That was sort of her comfort thing as she was falling asleep. But then her nails would get longer and longer. And so both me and my wife would just have these bloody, raw elbows all the time. And it's still kind of a horrible trigger for me. The kids found out about it recently, and they keep running up to us and, like, tickling our elbows a little bit. Very upsetting.
Wow. So you raised a raccoon baby? Is that what you just admitted to?
Yeah.
I was bringing that up as like, yes, babies do shock you sometimes.
Pete, by the way, how is your Bug Bjorn business going? Are you selling any?
Other than LT, he's my other only customer. So I'm hoping after the show airs, I'll get a lot more business. So thank you for plugging it. I appreciate it.
I love a mosquito Bjorn and just have like thousands of mosquitoes strapped to my chest.
Oh, I thought of it. I got them. I got it for you. Don't you worry.
Oh, that's so sweet. Why don't we talk about Jade finally, though? Because I do think the stuff going on with her is really, really fascinating, and it has been for several episodes' time. Everybody seems to be missing in the underground. There's some horrible screaming going on and red eyes, so we don't know exactly what's happening there. Kay has head to the top and taken over, and I love how Diane Guerrero is playing this. I think the way that she's playing Kay and how it is different from Jane is really fascinating. Really curious to hear what's going on in the underground. So I'm super into this whole storyline. What about you guys?
I'm just curious how it's going to go down with only one episode left, because we've obviously seen a lot of different changes in the underground. And what is this next existential threat? Is it, again, Puzzle Dad, the Puzzle Dad personality? Is it something new? Have all of the like Chainsaw Nun and the gang really turned?
When's Chainsaw Nun going to have her time up top?
And she got crossed out. She's totally X'd out in this episode.
Oh, man, because...
I mean, to your point, Justin, I do wonder how the underground stuff is going to connect. It always seems very separate from everything else that's going on, while a lot of the stuff that's not taking place inside of Kay's head, just by necessity of being out in the world, does seem to connect. So I'd love to see these two plot lines come together somehow. There's also a possibility, I guess, that this is more a tee up for season 4, but I guess we'll see what happens.
I feel like this next episode has to give them their powers back. Like, I feel it's very Doom Patrol for them to be like, oh, I've made some emotional and mental progress, but I need to sacrifice all of that so that I have power to beat up this gorilla. Yeah. So that's where I would imagine it's going. I'm just curious how much they're going to toss.
I also do wonder, while we're jumping into speculation for the final episode, what the battle is and what the stakes are, because villains wise, you've got the Brain, who seems fine, just dancing with old ladies and that's it. You got Mala, who I think dumps Cliff and Rita off,
pushes him off a cliff. He pushes Cliff off a cliff.
Cliff and Madame Rouge. Yeah.
Yeah, Cliff and Madame
Rouge. It's a true cliffhanger.
That's right. Off a cliff. So I guess we'll see what happened there. And then you do have Madame Rouge, assuming she survives the cliff, who still is gunning for them. So we've gotten these big apocalyptic finales the past two times. It's not immediately clear to me where we're heading with this one, because we already had the Eternal Flagellation a couple of episodes back at this point. You know?
Yeah. I just had a question for Justin. Like, I know you are addicted to pickles. Seeing Cliff's brain in a pickle jar, is that something that still, are you like, ooh, I would almost eat that?
Just been licking my lips. I've been licking my lips since I watched the episode. I'd love just a slice of Cliff's brain.
Oh, man. I'm a little worried about your pickle addiction.
Pickle anything, Pete.
Yeah, that's what pickle people say, and it makes me worried because that brain was pickled.
Is it Hannibal, the movie where he slowly slices off microplanes a guy's brain while he's still alive? I think that's what it is.
Ray Liotta, yes.
Yeah. Pretty horrifying. But you do that.
It was the actual Ray Liotta. I mean, I wouldn't...
Explains a lot of his choices.
Exactly.
Oh, hey, come on, man.
Come on.
Hey, whoa, come on, Ray. Hey, Ray, oh, come on, Ray Liotta. Yeah, you could shave. I mean, you don't want to shave a pickle, ideally. You may want to shave a Parmesan head cheese. But
that moment, you know, there is nothing like it in your life when your pickle comes to you and is like, hey, Doc, can I learn how to shave? And you're like, all right. And then you teach the pickle to shave.
Wow. Teach the pickle to shave. That one was a little wild even for me. Wow.
Why don't we call out other moments in the episode that we liked, that we thought were interesting? Pete, you've got that soy sauce on a pizza box list going on. Anything you want to shout out in particular?
Yeah, I mean, I just wanted to circle around what you were saying. I was really impressed with the whole Jane and Kay kind of conversation, and where, what that's going to lead to. I'm also like the fact that we kind of got this, bus kind of flipping tragedy, kind of insanity, going on while somebody's being pushed over a cliff. I mean, it cliff over a cliff hanger. And, this last episode, I don't think everything's going to be wrapped up, but it'll be interesting to see where our hero, our quote unquote heroes are at the end of the season. Because this show is creative and insane. So I really have no idea what's going to happen. I mean, face birds might show up, you know, they might get eaten by zombie butts, you know, because we haven't heard from that zombie butt in a while and it's still out there.
That's very true.
For a second, I thought that all the red eyes in the underground were butts. But I was like, that doesn't make sense.
I mean, speaking of things that don't make sense, I'm just going to throw out a couple of things here that I jotted down. First of all, not to go back to the baby scene, even though, again, I'm not upset or anything like that.
It seems like you are.
You're mad.
I'm furious. The whole feint of... they think Clara is Madame Rouge. She actually took the baby out of the room and Madame Rouge pretended to be a baby in the holder for just like a brief moment. Nonsense. Like, it's fine.
It doesn't
nonsense.
Make sense.
No.
It's also here's why it doesn't make sense. Hey, Clara wouldn't come back. And they're like, yeah, you're right. But Clara was real, but the baby wasn't. Like, what the F was that?
It was a little confusing. But is the idea that Madame Rouge was Clara for a minute? And then she, when they left the room and came back, she became the baby. And then the real Clara went to get the real baby.
No, she waited for Clara to leave the room with the baby, then pretended to be the baby just so she could jump out at them.
She was pretending to be Clara first, right?
No, I don't think so.
Because Rita was like, why would Clara do something nice for you? And that whole point
Madame Rouge, basically what happened was they were like, hey, I don't think that Clara is real. Madame Rouge was listening in the next room, and they were like, she didn't know what to do, so she just turned into a baby to try to, like, be like, oh, maybe Clara left the baby here, but, she chose wrong. It was either going to be that or another teapot, you know?
That would have been the teapot.
Yeah, it would have been the teapot, too.
Imagine being a teapot, short, stout, tip me over, pour me out.
A couple of lines from the brain in quick succession, which... again, I'm fine with this. I don't have a huge problem, but it just bugs me. I'm not a huge fan of this type of joke. The brain talking to Madame Rouge says, amnesia, interesting. What an oddly convenient side effect. Which I was like, okay, I get it. One meta joke about how you made this work. I didn't mind it. I rolled with it. And then he follows it up with talking about how he put everything together about Madame Rouge and her history. And he says, don't ask me how I figured all that out, which again is like, we don't want to spend time explaining this and that's fine, but you get one of those per episode, I feel like.
Yeah, I think that's fair. On the positive side, one scene I did like was the Kay cyborg scene where he interviews her like Niles interviewed all the other personalities. Yeah.
And the cyborg impression of Niles was adorable too.
I mean, we do a lot of accent work on this professional, in this podcast. And really, Cyborg just came in and put it all to shame with that flawless British accent.
Yeah. A couple of other lines that I liked. I love the line from Cliff, let's arm wrestle. Winner gets to call themselves Cyborg from now on.
Fun.
Come on, Cliff.
Also, holy shit, has everyone fixed their shit? Another good line.
Yeah. And while we're talking...
Hawaiian shirt was great.
Yeah. I love Larry in the Hawaiian shirt. It feels, it's one of those things where it's like, this guy doesn't have the temperament to wear a Hawaiian shirt, but he's trying
it
out
anyway. Vacation. It's adorable.
Yeah. Vacation mummy are the best. Yeah. I bumped into several vacation mummies here where I am. I like the line, two bananas short of a dog shit Sunday.
Good stuff.
I didn't catch that the first time around.
Pete, anything else you want to call out before we move on here?
No, it was just such a funny kind of like Madame Rouge at the door buzzer of the retirement community, like trying to get herself in was adorable. And I can't say enough about the gorilla just killing it in this episode.
Malah,
yeah. But the cliff over the cliff was just too much for me to take. I had to stop taking notes because I was laughing so hard.
What do we think is going to happen in this next episode? Any predicts?
Man, I think you're right about everybody getting their powers back in some way. And I think that's going to be a real bum out for them. I could even see a place where they're almost like physically back to the beginning of season one, isolated, alone, sad, depressed, so that it feels like any sort of progress they made whatsoever is completely gone by the end. I know that's not specific plot points, but I could see that happening and actually setting us up in a way for like they have to claw their way back to kind of feeling okay in season four, potentially.
Yeah, I think that's – I feel like Cliff is the only one that may just stay in the jar at the end of the next episode, I would think.
Oh,
but
come on. You can't jar Cliff for a whole ep.
He's jarred. He's fully jarred.
Oh.
I think LT and his new son, I think, will – I think that he will become born. He will emerge and be a new negative spirit. I think Rita will get over herself a little bit, I think, and move back in. Cyborg, do you think he's going to fully sacrifice his new look?
Man, I don't know. I want to see. I know I've been on
I think
this
he's going to have
now.
To sacrifice himself. Like, he's going to kind of, like, give up his, you know, his humanness to kind of save the team. I think something like that, there's going to be a choice, and he's going to kind of put his team first, and it's going to cost him his skin.
I still want to see Grid break out in some way. And I've been on that for three seasons, but I feel like that would be a really good tee up potentially for season four as a villain. If they all have to fight Cyborg's machine half in some way, I think that would be a lot of fun and pretty dope.
I'm very excited for this last episode, and you know, like, I don't know how it's going to go down, but if I was in charge, what I would do is you would see this like weird looking puddle, right? And then the bird would land next to it. And just as the bird is turning into Madame Rouge, the puddle is going to reach up and grab the bird by the neck, and it's going to be Rita. And then they're just going to get in this huge fight, and it's going to be a battle royale.
So Rita is a puddle?
Yep, she's going to blob herself into a puddle, and then that's when she gets the bird.
Yeah, I mean, if I saw, like, a thin sheen of human skin lying on the ground, I'd be like, that's a normal puddle.
Right. If you're a bird, you'd probably think that.
Sure. Just birds with their hollow bones that are always walking around, jumping into stuff.
Those lording it over the rest of us with our solid bones.
Oh, man. Exactly. Now, do you think what if the underground, all the red eyes we saw, if they're just throwing a big party for Jane?
Oh, like a surprise party.
A surprise party. That and Chainsaw Nun's going to jump out and be like, I'm going to cut this cake.
I mean, what if she's in the cake, right? Like for Pete, on your birthday, didn't you get that big race car cake and then you had a Chainsaw Nun jump out?
Hell yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah. And then I'm going to have P jump out of an Alex cake for my birthday.
Just jump out of Alex. It's fine. I'm done. Well,
you're out of here?
Cake me.
Is it cake? Is Alex cake? Check into the comments and shout out if you think Alex is cake or not, because it's going to be hard. It's a tough one.
Why don't we wrap up here, though, and talk about who is most doomed going into
the
finale?
Just one last thing I want to say. The season four of Doom Patrol started shooting at the end of February this year. So it is we're going to have a season four coming our way sooner than we think.
Very exciting. Who is most doomed going into the finale? Justin, you want to take that one first? Who's most doomed?
I think, I got to stick with Cliff on this one. I think he's the one, he's jarred. He's going to end up the season being jarred. He's just someone who things don't go super well for.
Seems fair. Pete, who is most doomed?
Niles. That fucking guy is dead.
Honestly, chances are high he could just show up at the end of this.
Don't do that.
I agree.
Don't do it.
I'm going to go with Rita, which I feel like I've been calling out sporadically over the past couple of episodes, but she has potentially so much to lose here, and this season has all been about her. So I feel like coming in at the end, there's got to be some sort of turn. There's some sort of punishment or realization or something is going to happen with her that's going to be big, but we'll see what it is. Yeah. If you'd like to support this podcast, patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Crowdcast on YouTube. Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about Doom Patrol. iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. And now, before we go, a piece of advice from Pete LePage.
Hey, don't be like Rita. You can fight birds, all right? Don't take shit from no birds.
I ain't afraid of no birds.